Welcome to Book It, a bi-weekly podcast where we talk frankly about books.
My name is Jill.
And my name is Michael.
Catch us every other Wednesday talking about books, publishing, indie bookstores, chatting with authors, and so much more.
Follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Book It Pod for more Book It content.
Want to read something you heard about on today's episode? Visit us at bookshop.org/shop/BookItPod. Hey, how are you?
I am doing well, Jill, and you sound, from my vantage point, much better.
I am glad to hear it. I am continuing to improve.
Can I ask, do you even remember at all recording last time?
A little bit. I remember we talked about the last time we recorded, and I forgot about it because I was on cold medicine, because I was really like actively trying to remember.
Yeah.
But, oh man, I'm trying to remember what the topic was.
It was our sidebar conversation.
Just chatting
about whatever we wanted. Yeah.
That's right. I was like, it wasn't romance. That's the last time I felt well.
Oh, by the way, truly, it really, I'm in the middle of editing our romance episode, which we'll have aired at this point, but that was when you started to feel not great.
Yeah.
And in listening to it, you sound perfectly healthy, and
okay.
Which tells me, like, it really hit you hard. And fast.
Because
yes. The next day, you were like, I got to go to the hospital.
Yes. It's been wild, and it's so interesting, because people are like, oh, are you better? And I'm like, no, I'm getting there, like, not all the way. And I went to a thing for the kids last night. And I started coughing and I had to like excuse myself. And people were like, are you okay? And I'm like, I've had pneumonia. Like they have told me it might take like a whole month to feel like 100% better. And people are like, a month?
Yeah.
I'm like, it's wild and I don't.
It is the pits.
Yeah.
But you do sound better.
Oh, thank you. I'm on the upswing.
Good.
I am wearing my pink sweatshirt today in your honor, and I'm so glad to see that you are wearing yours.
Yeah. It's basically the only thing I wear anymore.
Aw. Well, when I ordered this, I was like, oh, Michael will love this because it's pink.
And I love pink and red together. I think it's such a classic combination.
Yeah. And that's Jill's what's sweater. On yours also.
Exactly. Yeah. Jill's sweater is pink and it says bless your heart in cursive and the cursive is red.
It's red.
I just think it's such a feminine, beautiful look that I am like so into.
Yeah.
And much of that is due to the marvelous Mrs. Maisel. She wore an unbelievable outfit of pink and red once. And I was like, that's my future.
Have you seen the commercials for like the upcoming season?
Yeah, the first two episodes have aired.
Oh, have they?
Yes.
Michael, who knows
You're
what
elsewhere.
Goes on
yeah.
in the world? I love the commercial where she's in that pink red swimsuit and she's trying to get her manager to jump in the pool.
Oh. It's like we over romanticized the 50s and the 60s, absolutely, but give me all the looks.
So big news in publishing, which won't be as big when this airs, but I want to talk about it real quick.
Mm-hmm.
The Britney Spears book deal.
Yeah.
She went with Simon & Schuster, went up for auction. They were the highest bidder. It's reportedly a $15 million deal. Second highest payout to the Obamas.
Wow.
Which, right? Of course, they got like $60 million and there's two of them.
Yes.
So the gulf there is wide. But still, what do you have thoughts? What are your thoughts on this?
Oh, gosh. Well, if it reads anything like her captions do, I'm going to need a translator.
Have you seen the girl on TikTok who is Britney's Southern translator?
No, send it to me after.
I think you have to read them like out loud.
Yes.
In that voice. And then they make, that's mostly what she does. And then they make more sense. And also, I think I say this as a person who has lived in the South. There is a very particular way of speaking It's like my bless your heart sweatshirt. Yeah.
Yes.
Like you just describe things differently.
Sure. Yes.
And I think with she often has no punctuation. And so I think sometimes it can feel like, what is this?
I am actually truly a lifelong Britney Spears fan. I think, of course, I was a kid when she was becoming famous. And I remember her Oops, I Did It Again video being like very much a moment of like, yeah, I'm gay. I was so obsessed with it. I thought she looked amazing. I remember I was on vacation and Nickelodeon was doing this thing where you could like call in and vote for your favorite music video. And I like forced my family to go back into the hotel room from the pool at a certain point so I could call in and vote for Oops, I Did It Again. And it won. And I was convinced it was because of me.
I mean, obviously it was.
Thank you. It absolutely was.
Yeah.
It was because of me. And I have watched all of the Britney Spears documentaries about what's been going on with her. I've been following it for a couple of years when it was just kind of this like, is it real?
Yeah. Thing?
Because I knew she was in a conservatorship. Like I was in college when all of that went down and there was an MTV documentary about it that made it seem like it was a good thing. And then having watched the New York Times docuseries and there's a Netflix one as well, just realizing all of it was not true. Like it was all with the leaning that she had no say over. And I'm really, really, really hopeful that this book deal is just the beginning of whatever she wants next. Like, mm-hmm. I don't even care if she never does music again, because if that's not what she's been forced to do it for so long. I just want her to be happy. And yeah. I'm really genuinely eager to see what happens with it.
Yeah. I think it's gonna be really interesting regardless. I enjoy Britney Spears. I would not say like, she's not Taylor Swift for me. And I knew she was in a conservatorship, but I didn't really know that much about it until over the summer or whenever she made her statement in court. And then all of a sudden it was like everywhere and everything. But it's been really eye-opening what that process is like for people. Mm-hmm. And so I'm really interested to read it. I'm here for it. I feel like it's going to be my Jessica Simpson memoir
of
next year.
Yes. Yeah. And I just like,
I hope it is anyway.
Well, we're speaking that into existence and we know Brittany is a big fan of this podcast. So like,
absolutely.
This is our hope.
I mean, you made it possible for her to win that Nickelodeon award.
Yeah. And she's, yes. And I know she thinks about that and so do I all the time. I just think often about how she was, I think she was like 26 or 27 when it became a thing for her. And then she turned 40 this past year and she had no childhood. She had no young adulthood. And now she is 40 and independent for the first time, really. So I hope she has good people surrounding her right now and that the book is more than just like therapeutic. Like I don't want it to be something that's just so painful for her to do. Yeah. I clearly I'm in love with this person. Like I love Britney Spears so much.
Well, I think it's interesting because it's one of those things where I was like, gosh, this will be so interesting to read. I definitely want to hear her point of view, her perspective. But then it also made me reflect like, there's no way that this wasn't traumatic.
Oh, yeah.
And yeah, just like hoping that this is a good choice.
Absolutely, yes. Because it could go one way. It could go either way. And I hope it's just the start of good things.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So today, I don't know how to make a good segue. So we're just going to...
Yep, let's go on.
Going to take an abrupt turn. Today's episode is all about like burnout. And reading burnout in general, stress. I read that burnout is at an all-time high.
No.
How are you doing? Tell us about your burnout situation.
Everything is painful and hard to do. Nothing is joyous or fun. And I'm smiling. In particular, like, I know I've experienced burnout in, like, ways that are outside of the things that bring me joy. Like, yeah, I've had burnout at work, like, throughout my career. And I've had burnout socially. Like, I just need time to recharge and stuff like that. But it wasn't until the pandemic, which, like, I really would love for one day in the future for us to never have to ever reference the pandemic. But in the pandemic, I got really burnt out on reading and books, and really specifically very recently. Like, it wasn't even like at the height of the pandemic. It was, well, I guess that is debatable, but like, I'd say like the last 6 months of 2021, reading was difficult and I didn't want to do it. And I really struggle with that because it was the thing that brings me the most joy and is me time. Like, mm-hmm. it's something that if I'm in a room full of people, if I have a book and I need to be alone, I'm able to do that. And so it was something that I had to like figure out how to work through. And I've only recently figured out how to work through it and have only recently worked through it. But yeah, burnout is sort of like left and right in my life right now. What about you?
Yeah, I would say the same. I've been reflecting this morning on how much I wanted to share, and I just decided I would just be fairly transparent. The last couple of years have been really challenging for me on a personal level, and it's partly timing and partly COVID. I really hit a wall of work burnout.
Mm-hmm.
Right around the beginning of COVID. And I was like pushing through and just mm-hmm. being like, have to get through this, have to get through this, have right. to get through this. And just really reached a breaking point between parenting and my job at the beginning of 2021. And I just couldn't do it anymore. And that was the impetus behind me leaving my job. Like, I mm-hmm. took a month off and then I came back and said, can I have 2 more weeks off? And our supervisor was very supportive.
Yeah.
Was like, yeah, take the time and the space that you need. And I ultimately just felt like I could not go back to work full time. Just the mental load of parenting in COVID has been monumental.
Unparalleled.
And, you know, at first it was just like learning how to do everything over again. Like, how do you get groceries? How do you do this? How do you do that? Right. And then it just became this long, sustained, the kids are home and Mark is home and everybody needs to be fed. And now everyone needs new clothes, but I'm not going to the mall. And
right.
they all sound like little things, but they just really, really stacked up. And then on top of it, I am a very extroverted person,
mm-hmm.
but and I love being around people. But I also I thrive on being around people. But when I need to think, I need to be by myself.
Yeah,
and I have to kind of sit with my thoughts to work through them. And I thought it was really interesting because one of the biggest impacts of this has just been like freedom of movement.
Mm.
And I've lost a lot of personal space. And all of a sudden, like everyone was in our house all the time and school and work was happening everywhere. And those 5 or 6 hours a day that I would have, because I've worked at home, but no one else was here,
right.
where I could process my thoughts and feelings were just like, gone. And suddenly it was loud and intense and stressful, like 24 hours a day. And I feel like I am really just starting to piece things back together mm-hmm. As that has slowly peeled off. And it's been a lot longer and slower process than I thought it would be, which is a very long-winded answer, but I wanted to share it. Because for me, this episode is less about reading burnout and more about bibliotherapy in response yeah. to general burnout.
Oh.
You know, like,
snaps for Jill.
I think it can be like both things. So I'm excited to look at it from both angles, because for me, this has really just been total and complete fried burnout.
Yes. Well, thank you for sharing that, Jill. And it is an interesting situation that you're in, because in one that I think a lot of people will understand and relate to who have young kids, but especially young kids who are like in the phase of like independence, but also like very deeply still very much need you. Yeah. And because I'm just now recollecting, I'm having a recollection of like those first couple of, well, all of season one, really, when we were doing this virtually, and how, and correct me if I'm wrong, but like at some point you just kind of like, you're like, not you, but the universal you, like, are in the thick of it. So you're not, you can't always fathom the insanity of it until you're on the outside of it. And yeah. I'm having that moment where I'm like, wow, like we did all of that while Jill's whole family was home doing homework, needing help with the homework, and then also home on the weekends, and then going immediately into summer where they're at home for 3 full months, and then going back to school in the fall virtually. It was just like, yes, literally never ending. Where, and I'm on my side, I'm like, my dog's barking, we have to wait 20 minutes.
Well, I share this. I don't want to minimize anybody else's experience,
of course, no,
because this has been hard for everybody. And I think especially, yes, now about people with the under fives who still don't have a vaccine.
Yes, that's hard.
And those kids, Mark and I were talking about this the other day, those kids are, at least our kids, when they were they're so touch needy, mm-hmm, like they're always touching, yes, you. And I said to Mark, I was thinking of one of our friends, and I was like, I was talking to her, and both her children were climbing on her, and my immediate first thought was, I could not have done the past 3 years
with a five-year-old
with people touching me all the time. Which is terrible and not helpful for her in any way. But it's just one of those things. Like, I think in different ways, everybody's experience has been hard, but yeah, that's the way that mine has been hard.
Well, and but to your point, thinking about it in terms of like, when COVID started, we were like at the height of our work was becoming really important to both of us. Mm-hmm. And it was also getting very busy, and it was an exciting busy, but it was hard to like navigate how to operate now completely remotely in a business that like very much needs to not be remote.
Yeah.
But so we're just working all of the time. I mean, literally, you and I and many people on the team were working 7 days a week in, yeah, just the strangest hours. Just talking about this, I'm realizing like, yeah, okay, so that was bad and happening. And then I lost my job in that October of 2020. Gosh, literally, like,
yeah,
this is insane. It's 2022. Anyway, I lost my job in October 2020, and I kind of just like barreled on, and my reading slowed a little bit, but it wasn't as significant as was most recently. Once I like got a job that I really, really love and I'm currently at, did I not take stock of like how traumatic that experience all was? And yeah, I think it was just like, actually, I think you told me this, because I was having a really hard time and I was very emotional, and you had said something like, you are like grieving right now. Like, yeah, you're in the middle of dealing with something that none of us had time to deal with before. So be kind to yourself. And I was just like, well, great.
Yeah. No, I think we were in survival mode for so, yes, long. And it was like, you know, get up, get your pants on, get moving.
Yeah.
And I did that for as long as I could do that. And then, right, my body was like, yeah, we're done with that.
Yeah. Yes. Like, actually, physically, I was, yes, like exhausted.
Yes.
And mentally, of course. So then, like, of course, the things that were part of my and your survival instinct, in this instance, reading and in bibliotherapy, as you say, like, the minute things were, quote unquote, getting back to normal, I like couldn't fathom. It was like almost like traumatic to open, yes, a book and read a book. You know what I mean?
Yes. Yes. And then I think now I look around and especially in Cincinnati, like we haven't seen the sun for weeks.
Yeah.
And I think every third day it rains for like 16 hours.
Oh my
gosh.
Move
to Cincinnati. It's lovely here.
Actually do. Like I do love it here, but like it has been, climate change has not been kind to us this season.
I think February and the beginning of March are just always really hard. And that's where we are.
Yes. Yes.
You know, we need vitamin D and we are not getting it. So
absolutely.
Do you feel like there is a difference between like, not really a difference. Here's what I really want to say.
Okay.
Reading is a joy and it's a privilege and we love it. When you struggle with it, does it make you feel guilty?
Yeah. It makes me feel like I shouldn't even say that I read.
Right?
Like I, and that is part of why I feel like this conversation is so important, because we validate burnout in sort of like external ways. All of the things that like, of course, you're going to be burnt out on. And part of like, if you're having burnout at work or something, well, then one of the things people say is like, then indulge in the things you love. Okay, so like, what happens when I'm having burnout on the things that I love? Like, I just like die. I just sit there and like, accept the inevitable.
That's it. You get one shot at burnout recovery. And if you're also burned out on that, we just leave you to die.
That's it. Yeah. Yeah. It makes me feel really guilty. And it makes me feel like I'm not part of the community anymore. And nobody is making me feel the way but me. Like,
yes.
Do you know what I mean? It's all up here. And I hate that. And I would love for that to be something that no longer exists. And I am feeling myself getting closer to that.
Yeah, same. I would say same for me. It is very weird because reading is mentally and emotionally strenuous.
Uh-huh.
Your brain processes it in a lot of the same places as things that really happen. When that part of you is the part that's burnt out, it's just like, well, you're not going to sign up for more of that. But then you're kind of like, but wait, that's my go-to. Like, what? Now what? Like,
it's literally, I'm just like scrolling on Instagram and Twitter for hours and then shocked at the headache I have.
Yes. Yes. And then you end up sending bizarre texts. I sent Michael a text last week about how I had spent several days on Crow TikTok.
Right.
I mean, if that's not burnout, I don't know what is. I was watching these videos about people who like leave little nuts and I don't know, seeds for crows, and then crows bring them shiny things. And I mean.
I genuinely was like unsure of how to respond. So I was just like, I do love crows.
Oh, you were great.
But I mean, like, that is a weird thing in this house. I think crows are amazing and beautiful.
Yeah.
And gosh, another like sneak into my life. Gilmore Girls like sustains me. And the Edgar Allan Poe episode, whenever they're reading The Raven, I have to say every time, even when it's not a fucking crow, I'm like, crows are so cool. And Josh is like, thank you. You say that every time we watch this episode.
So I'm curious, like, what have you been trying? What's working? What's not working?
Okay. I'm glad you asked, because I do have a couple of things that have worked for me. And it took intentional time to sit down and think about, like, why is this hard for you? Like, what about this is joyless now? And because even for me, like, there was a separation of I'd be reading a book and I could tell that it was good and that I theoretically really liked it, but I could not connect my emotion to it in the way I used to.
Yeah.
And so like so many books that I've read recently, I'm like, I loved that, but I didn't have that love feeling. And I know it's because I'm burnt out. For me, some things that helped were, and listener, take some notes. If you're feeling burnt out on reading, something that I did was just trying to understand why I was feeling burnt out, like I said. And for me, it was because I wasn't listening to, one of the reasons is because I stopped listening to like what I wanted to be reading most. And a lot of that comes from conversations we've had about, you know, on social media, everyone's reading the same four books.
Yes.
So then you're like, I guess I should read that too. And then, but I really, I'm such a mood reader that like I force myself out of what my mood is to read something I feel like I'm supposed to be reading. And then I'm not engaging with it in a really genuine, authentic way.
Yeah. It's like the book FOMO. You're like, you're afraid you're missing out, but it's not where you're supposed to be.
Especially because people like you and me were like, I have to read a lot for work. I read a lot for the podcast. And so like, and I have a book club. And so I have a lot of like required reading in my life. And it makes me feel like other books, I'm wasting my time if I'm not reading the books that are all over everywhere right now, even if I don't want to right now.
Yeah.
And so what I have recently started to do is just like stopped doing that. And I've just started reading like whatever is calling to me. If it's a classic, if it's a book I've already read before, like whatever, just read it. And what I've found is that I'm like eager to pick it back up. And I haven't felt that way in a really, really long time. Just for example, I was just, I can't remember what the book was that I read right before it, but I have been reading Sense and Sensibility last week or so. And I had been like looking at it and looking at it and looking at it, wanting to read it, but not reading it because, you know, it's 200 years old. Like I got time, but all the other books are happening and I've got all these books I have to read. And so I was just finally like, you know what? Fuck that. Read it. And I could not put it down. And I was like really mourning the end of that because I was loving that feeling. And then I was like, I could read her other stuff because I'm absolutely in that mode. I'm in that mood right now to read Jane Austen, like Victorian era stuff. But I was already invalidating that and like, no, you really should read something that just came out, like support new authors, blah, 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 which I'm doing all the time. Okay. Don't hate me for it. What I just said. So I was like, no, read Persuasion. You want to read Persuasion? So I picked up Persuasion and I'm loving it. And I'm loving reading. Like, I'm not just loving the book. I'm enjoying reading right now. So I stopped feeling like I was doing the wrong thing.
Yeah.
By not reading what I really want to read.
I have a really – this. I did not make this up, but I'll be honest. I don't remember where I read it or heard it.
Tell me.
But somebody said, you know, the good news is that books are not fruit. They will wait for you forever.
Everyone, like, hear that.
Like, they're quiet. They're not complaining. They're okay with being ignored. You know, they can sit on your counter and totally fine, not fruit.
So now you understand why I buy a shit ton of books and don't read them for a while.
It's so much better than when you go to the grocery store and you're like, I'm going to eat healthy this week. Yes. And you spend $150 on produce.
I seriously, like, I'm going to make steak cauliflower and that cauliflower is a different color. just kidding. We made that twice last week. It's delicious. I'll give you the recipe.
I love cauliflower.
No, and I also think we're very lucky because, like, I think a lot of the people I follow, specifically on Instagram, don't really bother with this. Like they're very good at just like reading whatever the hell they want all of the time. Mm-hmm. And so I'm just yesterday I was thinking about that and I'm just trying to lead by their example of being like, okay, so they read a lot. Like their goals are definitely numbers based and that's not my vibe, but they're also reading whatever the hell they want. And I need to learn from that. Like I need to continue to do that because that's what I'm preaching all of the time. And I just, I've been bad about that lately.
Yeah, I totally agree.
Something else that I kind of mentioned that helps is just revisiting something that I love. And if I'm feeling like a lot of pressure to read something and not really know how I liked it or not, like being worried about feeling like I wasted my time when I'm feeling burnt out, then I just like pick up a book that I know that I love because it takes the pressure off. And I know it's going to be some time that I'm enjoying. It's something that I haven't reread books for a long time because I've just been like turning them out and reading and reading and reading.
Yeah.
And the other day I just sat down and reread one of my favorite books, which I'll get to later. And it's teeny tiny and didn't take me very long. So I was like, why did I avoid this? It only helped. It only reinvigorated me and was like a good way to break up my day. It was like,
yeah,
I'm inundated with work. I can't write the story I'm trying to write. just read this like 100-page book really quickly. And it just really, really was very helpful. And my third and final thing that helps me is lean into it. If you are feeling burnt out, don't force something because it's going to make you feel worse. So like, chances are, if you're a reader, you also love other things. So like, put the book away, turn on your favorite TV show, watch a movie, listen to some music, find a recipe, like do something else, because reading isn't it right now. And that doesn't mean you're not a reader. It doesn't mean you love it less. It just means you need a break from it for some reason. And that also really helped because I was just like, I can't do this right now. And I'm going to stop trying to do this right now. So I just, Josh and I have been like going through all of the Oscar nominated movies, trying to get them down and starting new shows that we've been putting off. And what I have found is that the stuff that I'm loving outside of reading is really making me want to read because it's just another form of media that I love. I love storytelling. So if you're feeling burnt out, maybe just lean into it and be okay with it.
I love all of those. Some of them have worked for me and some have not. I love to reread normally. That has not done it for me this time. For me, it's really been about a lack of focus. And I think it all stems back to that kind of loss of time to process my thoughts. Is anything I put in just felt like more information.
Yeah.
Even if it was something I had done before. So my biggest one has literally just been letting it go.
Yes.
Letting it go. I have rewatched Friday Night Lights.
Good.
I rewatched Bridgerton.
So do we.
Yeah. Like I did.
And by this time, actually, season two might be out. Sorry, go ahead.
I didn't read for at least 6 weeks. I just didn't even try.
Yeah.
Because it just got to the point where I was like, it's become a chore.
Yes.
Chores suck. Sits forever. And I want to love this.
100%.
And so for me, it was a lot about, am I still a reader if I don't read?
Right.
And I had to be like, yes, Jill, this isn't going to be forever. And it wasn't. But it was absolutely no reading of any kind, not even an audiobook for 6 weeks. And then the second thing that has been really helpful to me, and we always have these thoughts in our minds of like, if I'm going to read, I need to be reading a certain kind of book. And I need to be doing this, and I need to be reading diversely, and I need to be reading widely, and I need to be challenging myself. And yeah, all of those things are true. Sometimes. And sometimes we need space to feel better, and that reading needs to look different. And so for me, it was just gentle reads.
Yeah.
Things that were funny and witty, but just ultimately, like, I was never, like, worried about what was going to happen or stressed out or, like, super emotionally taxing.
Yeah.
Not that they were not things – like, I was invested in the story.
Sure.
But with just kind of this quiet comfort.
I totally hear you.
Yeah, because I just felt like I needed something with low emotional labor. And the books I had been reading were not that. And the things I kept telling myself I needed to read were not that. And so just letting that go and just reading things purely that were gentle and enjoyable were really, for me, where it was at.
You're bringing up a lot of interesting points. One of them being, at what point do we get to decide to call ourselves readers, and who is deciding that, as well as conversations about, like, what's the right book to be reading ever. I am of the mind that every single person is a reader and that there is a book for literally everybody. And if you read one book a year, if you read one book every other year, someone who is not a reader didn't do that. Like, everyone is a reader.
Yeah.
And there are so many reasons why people can't find time to read. I mean, my sister recently, being several months ago, was saying how she has a young, my niece is three, and my other niece is, I think, 2 months old. And while she was pregnant, she was able to finish a book. And she had said, like, I forgot how much I loved this feeling, and I just haven't had the time. Like, I work full time and have a 3-year-old and am very pregnant.
Yeah.
And I could feel her, like, trying to validate that she hadn't read in a while. And I was like, you know, that doesn't matter, right? Like, just read whenever you want to. Because, like, if you are forcing it, then you're probably not going to enjoy it as much. And I think that, like, so, like, are you a reader if you haven't read for 6 weeks? Duh. You know, like, absolutely.
Yeah. It's very interesting. It's a grace that I am ready to pass out to literally everyone except myself. Yes,
absolutely. I mean, you could put that about basically anything.
Basically anything.
You're so sweet and, like, patient and kind and give you the best advice and then none to yourself.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. I need that on a button. yes. And I think that's one of the things, is just being like, I have a lot of pride in holding myself to a high standard.
Yes.
And just being like, yeah, you're still a good person. Still smart.
Yeah.
Still everything is fine. it's been very weird.
Yeah. I also was like, to your second point of, like, gentle reads, when it recalled back to me, like, one of the first books I read at the start of the pandemic was How to Find Love in a Bookshop, which is, like, an incredibly gentle read. And I think about often because of the peace it gave me, and that it was a book that I genuinely, like, was so eager to read because of the way it made me feel. And to your point, like, yeah, I liked the characters and I was rooting for them and I wanted everything to, like, be good. I wanted it to be a good book. I'm not saying, like, read shitty books, but, like, just, like, there are different definitions of what a good book is, and gentle reads are just as good as, like, highbrow literary fiction that is, like, kind of a bummer. And just, like I said, like, mood reading, just lean into the mood you're in, and, like, your reading will probably follow. Because I think that's probably why reading Jane Austen is feeling so lovely right now, because I very much care what happens to these characters, and it's all so gentle and sweet, and
it's low stakes.
It's like, will they marry? Probably by the end, but, like, right now they don't know that.
Yeah. Yeah, all three of my bibliotherapy for your burnout books, they're all three of them are gentle reads for this
good
week.
Yeah,
should we get to it? Do you have book recommendations, or do we want to talk more?
I have some book recs if you do.
Yeah you want to go first?
So my first one goes along the same lines of, like, read a book you know you love. My first one is Tuck Everlasting by Natalie Babbitt.
Yes.
I love this book. Occasionally, when I think about it, I'm like, is this my favorite book of all time? I don't know, but it's definitely up there. I read it when I was feeling really burnt out, because it's barely 100 pages. It's like 120 pages. And it's a book that is for young people, like middle graders for sure. I just got to let everybody know I am boring the hell out of Jill. That was the biggest yawn I've ever seen in my life.
No, I slept really badly last night.
All right, never mind, not Tug Everlasting. But my point being, like, it was fun to return. And I haven't read middle grade in a while. And middle grade has changed a lot. Like, the scope of it is different. And this was written in the 50s, I believe. And the language is just so stunning. And was a great way for me to get back into the kind of reading I like to do, the kind of writing I like to read, but the pressure is off. Like, I've read this before. It's very short, and it's giving me, like, a flavor of something that I know I love and that I definitely want to return to eventually, because it is gentle, obviously, but it's also, like, deals with some bigger issues. And
yeah,
it was one that I hadn't read. I used to reread annually, and hadn't for several years because COVID ruins our lives. And I finally did, and I just missed it so terribly. So that's my first one, Tuck Everlasting.
I love it.
What about you?
My first one is the book that I could not remember the full title of when we recorded our last episode. Oh. It's Miss Cecily's Recipes for Exceptional Ladies by Vicki Zimmerman. And this book is lovely.
Yeah.
It's interesting. It is structured. The main character is she's on the eve of her 35th birthday, and she and her boyfriend break up. Well, they take a break. Jeez.
Okay.
And she has long been unhappy at her job, and after this breakup, she's just like reevaluating her whole life, and she quits her job. And she starts volunteering at this like retirement home for ladies. And she ends up assigned to this woman who is so smart, but so challenging and cantankerous and crabby and opinionated, but who has lived this like monumental life. And she loans her this recipe book. And so the book is organized as the main character is kind of dissecting all the different parts of her life and kind of deciding what she wants her life to look like and be. And it's divided. Each chapter starts with a recipe. But it's this cookbook that was written in the 1950s. So it's like, you know, when your husband's boss is coming to dinner. But then, like, that will somehow tie in with what's going on in the story.
Okay.
I don't know if I've explained this well at all, but.
Actually, you just froze for a long time, so I'm just trying to.
Yeah. Just nod. Like, I'm sure you did a great job.
Yeah.
I thought the book had a really interesting organization with the recipes. I hadn't ever really, like, read a book like that.
Really? Yeah.
And I liked how the recipes would tie into the plot, and I liked that it was gentle. It was witty and engaging, but I also knew that, like, she's going to figure this out. Like, I don't know exactly what the answer is going to be, but it's going to have a happy ending.
We're
going to
be fine by the end, right?
Yes. And it was, but it was just... it was like a breath of fresh air for me, this book.
When was this published?
Let me look. It is a June 2020. It's a pandemic book.
I was going to say, because the title is so familiar to me, but I couldn't tell if it was like familiar in that it's been out for like 10 years or if it was like a pretty recent book.
Yeah, I didn't realize that. I mean, it's newer. It's the summer, first summer of the pandemic. And it came out in paperback. There was not a hardcover.
Oh, that's like a thing now.
Yeah. I thought it was nice. I mean, it's like a star review from LJ. So it says fans of Jennifer Weiner, Ellen Hildebrand, Sophie Kinsella will delight in the recipe for confidence, romance, and fun. So I would say this is probably aimed at like a women's fiction. I hate that term, but
yeah,
I would say that those comparisons are fair and not.
And broad.
Yeah, because it's not. Obviously, it starts with her breaking up with her boyfriend, so I don't want to say it's not a romance book, but it's also not a romance book.
100%. Yeah, I think it's hard. If there is even like a sliver of romance in a book, marketers are like, it's romance.
Right. Yes. How about you?
My next one is a book I've talked about before on this podcast, and in season one, we interviewed the author, I think. What is Time? It was season one, and it's another one that's like really short, really a swift read that is very emotionally like fulfilling. It's just very satisfying, and sweet and tender. It's called Another Brooklyn by Jacqueline Woodson.
Mm.
Again, it's I think it's like 180 pages, and it's written, it's not in verse, but it's in really short, chunked paragraphs. And it follows August and her three friends in Brooklyn in the 1970s. And it starts with her having run into one of them on the subway, which, and having not seen her in a very long time. And then it cuts to her just remembering the experience of having these deep and important friendships in adolescence, in Brooklyn, in a really important time. I love stories about friends passionately, and especially from the perspective of like an adult looking back on a friendship they had as a kid. And I think this book is hard to categorize for bookstores because it is a book for adults, but because it's a book about childhood friendship, a lot of places misunderstand that for children's books, like why young adult or middle grade even. And it certainly is not. It's not like particularly adult in themes, but it's just not for kids.
No, it's like that picture book. What is it? It's like the boat, the pig. Do you know the one I'm talking about? There's a boy.
No. I've got boat, I've got pig, I've got boy.
The boy, it's like that picture book, The Boy, The Bull, The Fox, and The Horse.
I've never heard of it. Have I? You know what? I have. Yes, I have. Yes, I have. I can see the cover.
Yeah, it came out at the end of 2019. Yeah. And like basically it looks like a picture book, but the whole thing is a giant metaphor for like
it's
life and death and change and
yeah, it's stunning.
It's not for children.
Don't get it for a child. Exactly. That's how I feel about Another Brooklyn, in that it's one that if I don't have time, I'll just read like the first couple of pages and just like get lost in her language because I just love the way she writes. And it just, especially during times of COVID when like we're separated from each other for so long, I really loved reading stories about important relationships that aren't family relationships, because something I think we lose as adults is like the importance of friendships in our lives, and nurturing those is very important. And so that's another one that I just highly recommend. And I like buried that with Jacqueline Woodson when we talked to her. I at the very end was like, hi, this was a really important book to me when I read it. Thanks for writing it. And then I cried. And I really should have like taken an opportunity to like ask her about it. Like been like, tell me about writing it. It's one of my favorite books of all time.
Yeah. I hope we get to talk to her again.
Yeah, 100%. I was thinking about that. Never mind. I don't want this. It's about work. I was thinking about that the other day because we were discussing just moments in life when you like it, like, you know, like dream interviews or dream situations. And I was like, I really wanted to talk to her. And I just asked.
Yes.
That's like not romantic, but it happened that way.
Yes.
Do you have any other ones?
I do. My second one is The Reading List by Sarah Nisha Adams.
I am dying to read this.
This book is like quietly beautiful and like heartwarming and lovely, and it starts from a place of a retired gentleman who his wife has passed away, and he notices from under the bed a book that she had taken out from the library that had not been returned. And a reading list falls out of the book. He makes his way through the books on the list, inadvertently, because this librarian finds the list. The list finds its way into different hands. And so it's one of those like coincidence stories that weaves a lot of different characters together. But it centers on the community of this library. And a family. And
wow. You're speaking so many languages that I love right now.
No, it's just, it's one of those books where like, I don't often cry at books. And when this book.
Neither do I.
Yeah. But this book was just like, at the end, it just felt like this emotional release, like, in the best way possible. It was just nice. It's a nice story. Really well written. I am excited for other people to read it because I went on a binge of like trying to get someone else to read it because
I will.
I liked it so much.
Yeah, I had it on hold at the library for a long time, but it was, I mean, I was very far in the line.
Yeah.
Which is a good sign. I think people are like looking for it. So I haven't checked in a while where I stand, but yeah, I'll read it.
Yeah. And I did that one on audio. The audio was really good.
Oh, good. Okay, good.
Do you have another?
I have another one. And it's also just like a general piece of advice for if you're feeling burnt out, book burnout. Again, mine is all about like keeping the stakes low and taking the pressure off. And the really good way to do that, I've said this before, but picking up a short story collection is a really great way to dip your toe back into reading if you've been taking a break and not feel like you didn't achieve something, because you can just read a story, put it down. You don't have to read like half the book to feel like you have to finish it really quickly. You can read one story at a time. And a really good one that I love is Stories for Nighttime and Some for the Day by Ben Laurie. I read it in college for an assignment, and he writes these like adult fairy tales, and they're really extreme and like outlandish and weird. And they are so beautiful and emotional and always optimistic and very, very short. Like some of them are a paragraph long, some of them are 2 pages long, some of them are several pages long, but it's so easy to read it very quickly. And I had the pleasure of meeting him. He came to talk at our school after we finished the book, and I was just like, he was such a, you know when they say like people look like their dogs?
Yes.
He looked like the books he writes. Like his stories are just so quirky and different. And he was such a quirky, genuinely quirky person. And I was just like really nervous I'm a nervous person. I was nervous to talk to him, and I was getting my book signed. And he asked me, I've told the story on the podcast before. He asked me what my name was so he could write it. And I was like, oh, my name's Michael, spelled the normal way, and just kind of laughed. And I don't know why I said that. Like, how else can you spell Michael, you know? And in the book, I turned into the page, he wrote, to Michael, spelled the normal way.
Oh.
Isn't that so cute?
That is cute.
And it was just like, I like when people are hearing me in ways that I'm not hearing myself. And like, and reflect that back to me in a way that makes me feel like very much present. Like I it's easy to like make yourself disappear. And in the moment I was giving myself a hard time about something stupid I said, he made me feel like,
yeah,
in on the joke.
I love that.
Yeah. So I love these stories, and I think he's a delightful person.
I like the concept of looking like the book you write.
Yeah. Which is like also like, I hope to God I don't, because my stories are bummers. Whenever I write something, it's just like I go dark, and I'm like, I don't think I'm that way.
No, I don't think so.
I mean, I can be. Everyone can be, but
yeah. I've talked a little bit about my last book, but I wanted to talk about it one more time, just because it is an example of success and failure all in one.
Oh, love it.
I did A Gentleman in Moscow, which I talked about on the last episode, like took me 100% by surprise. It's hugely long. It's set in Russia. The main character is a guy. The writer's a man. Like nothing about this book said Jill. And yet the beauty of the language completely won me over.
Oh, I just got chills.
It was soothing in a way that's like really hard to describe, just like the beauty of the language.
Oh, Jill, you getting passionate about this is like making me emotional.
I love this. The writing in this book is phenomenal. So I was like, great. What do I want to read next? And then I was like, oh gosh, he has other books. Like I should just read the next one.
Uh-oh.
Why do I do this?
We all do it.
I listened to like the first 20 minutes of it. And to be clear, I want to know the story. I want to read this book. I was just like, no, everything in my body was just rejecting it. It was like,
it wasn't
Moscow. Like an allergic reaction.
Yeah.
So just because something works once doesn't mean it'll work twice.
Or at the very least, like Not right away.
Yes. But I think there's something to be said for picking something that's completely different.
Oh, 100%. Yes.
Just something you would not normally do. There was nothing about this book that is any of the things I normally look for.
That's actually a really good point. Just for my book club, we just read Harlem Shuffle by Colson Whitehead. And I love Colson Whitehead. I love The Nickel Boys. It's one of my favorite books in the last couple of years. And I knew I wanted to read it because I'll probably read anything he publishes because he's a talented writer. And even having read the description, I was like, okay, this definitely isn't something that I would pick up for myself. But, it's for book club, so of course I'll read it. And maybe I'll like it. In that book, it was a book that I was reading sort of at the same time as reading Sense and Sensibility, and I read it really quickly, which is not like me, but I was also like, used it as like, you know what, you've been in this rut, focus, like just read this book, because then you can talk about it with your friends. And it just was not for me at all, and it was objectively brilliant and good,
yeah,
but just a subject matter that is just not interesting to me. And I forgot how good that felt, to your point. Like, I was like, this hadn't, I would never have read this. And I finished it. Like, what a joy.
Yeah.
I hadn't thought about that because I've just been thinking so much about like comfort reads and reading what you love.
And it made me think about that series you read that where each one was a season.
Oh, yeah. The Seasonal Quartet.
And what a wonderful experience that was. And then just trying to dissect, like, what's the difference between that and me just being like, absolutely not. I cannot take another book by this person. Like, yeah, I don't know where that line is.
I think it's something to do with expectations. Like, especially when I did this with Lauren Groff. Like, I loved Fates and Furies. And then I immediately went to read Arcadia. And I was looking to replicate the feeling I had reading Fates and Furies, which was my bad. Like, she didn't want me to do that.
Yes. That was a meat choice.
Yeah, that was a meat choice. And ultimately, I did put it down like you did with yours, and then took some time and then read other books and then returned to her other stuff and was like, God, she's good. Like, she's such a good writer. I shouldn't have read something by her immediately following what I have considered the best book ever.
Yeah.
We all do it. It's because we want to support them.
We do. We do. This has been really helpful.
It has been. I like want to just go read right now.
Yes. I'm going to take my special cough medicine, but after that, maybe.
Oh, make very, very after that. Like,
yeah.
Because you didn't even remember the name of our last episode.
And yet here I am showing up.
Did you watch Parks and Rec?
No.
Okay, never mind. There's an episode where Ben Wyatt passes a kidney stone and then he's on pain medicine and is a delightful, hilarious episode. Listener, if you know what I'm talking about. But yeah, this has been so helpful and I feel really invigorated. I feel good about my reading right now. I feel like I have the right expectations. I feel like I'm doing it for myself. So I'm just interested in what y'all think. Do you have books that you turn to when you're experiencing book burnout? Do you experience book burnout? And what advice do you have for us, for others? Let us know. We are all over social media at Book It Pod, Instagram, Twitter, TikTok. You can email us at info@bookitpod.com. Head to our website at bookitpod.com and check out our bookshop affiliate store, bookshop.org/shop/bookitpod. Wow. Guinness Book of World Records, times that the word book has been said.
It's a lot of times, but yeah. You know, it's our thing.
And it was an us decision.
It was. Yeah.
Toodles, Jill.
See ya. Thank you for listening to Book It, a bi-weekly podcast where we talk frankly about books.
Book It is available across podcast platforms.
Subscribe to never miss an episode, and don't forget to leave a review before you go.
We'd love to stay in touch. You can find us online at bookitpod.com or on Instagram and Twitter at bookitpod.
Want to read something you heard on today's episode? Visit us at bookshop.org/shop/bookitpod.
Book It was created by hosts Jill Burkett-Ragacy and Michael Woodson, with sound design and production by Madeline Call at Honeysuckler.